Welcome to Spiritual Cartel's Big Book Main Share. This week I'm pleased to introduce Jason, who has kindly agreed to come and share for us. So Jason, it's over to you.
All right. Thank you so much. My name is Jason. I'm a recovered drug addict and alcoholic. I'd like to thank you for inviting me today. Just very honored to be here. I'm going to start off with a little prayer, see if I get grounded. Just want to thank you, God, for bringing me here this afternoon. Place me in front of this screen with this fellowship of addicts and alcoholics and people seeking a solution. I ask that you just allow me to be vulnerable and authentic. Just set aside everything that I think I know so that I can have an honest and true experience. Allow me to be a channel and vessel of your word tonight. And allow it to land on one open heart. In your name I pray. Amen. So as I said, my name is Jason. I'm from San Diego. I am currently involved in the Fellowship of the Big Book Awakening. I have been so blessed to be placed around people that are God-centered and that focus and strive for a personal relationship with God. It's been very enlightening, effective, and allowed me to grow in a way that I never thought was possible. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous June 12th, 2018. Today, my sobriety date is June 5th, 2024. It's been a journey for me, and I will attempt to bring that darkness into the light today. It's been a first step problem, and I'll touch on that. So I'm to share my experience, strength, and hope with you guys today and utilize this book, which has been a godsend in my life. And on the very first page, the title page here, today what I'm going to give you is a story of how Jason has recovered from alcoholism and drug addiction. When I read that, it was pointed out to me to be one of the greatest promises in the book, and it really got my attention. I don't necessarily know that qualifying myself is a requirement when I'm involved in speaking engagements. If I wasn't qualified to be here, I wouldn't be here. I have become a grateful, recovered alcoholic and drug addict. And I can explain that as we move forward. If I was to touch on some of my past and the things that got me here, I would first turn to page 18 and I would read you these few sentences that say, "But not so with the alcoholic illness. For with it, there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents." Anyone can increase the list. So it's a really good description of what brought me here. I started using methamphetamine, marijuana, acid, very young age, about 12 years old. Began drinking shortly thereafter. And it just kind of turned into a way of life for me. Everybody I knew, everybody I hung out with, my family members, we all drank and used. So like it tells me in the pages of the big book, my alcoholic and drug addict life was the only normal life I knew. And I never tried to differentiate the true from the false. I never acknowledged a problem until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And a little bit about what brought me here was coming from a broken home and turning my back on my family as soon as I became of age, starting a family very young, starting a business very young. I walked through life with this idea of superiority, being better than. And as I move forward tonight, I can tell you some truths that I've seen in that and the fear that kind of drives that. But I utilize that to manipulate, to get what I want, to become rather successful in life. Started a business at a very young age, got married, had kids. Had to utilize selling drugs because I had to be better. I had to have the best. And I had to prove to myself that I was better than you. So you had to come to me to get what you wanted. I always had what I needed. And it's always been my solution in life. You guys, I love the intro to this meeting. It was beautiful. And the one thing that you stated in one of your readings was that we belong here if we found that we could not stop when we wanted to. And I began to see that as I got older. Again, I didn't recognize the problem. I just thought that I was moving through this life the only way I knew how and doing what I wanted. I wasn't aware of spiritual malady that was driving me. I wasn't aware of this emptiness, this hole inside me that I could not fill. I filled that hole with money, with drugs, with women, with validation from your envy and all of the things I surrounded myself with to prove to you that I was better than you. So as I grew older and my family grew older, I came to this place of control. I didn't drink to black out. I've never had handcuffs put on me. Never been to jail. I was a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. In fact, when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and told my colleagues and my friends that I was in a program of recovery, they all looked at me and said, "Why?" That's how well I hid what was going on behind closed doors in my home. That's how ugly it was in my home. The loneliest I've ever been, I might get a little emotional. I don't know what to tell you guys. I'm trying to just be vulnerable and super honest here, you know, but the loneliest I found myself, I've been married for 31 years. My children are 34 and 30. I have 3 grandchildren. So it gives you an idea of how far back the history goes. But around 2012, the loneliest I had ever been was laying in bed next to my wife. That's how I felt. And so I made this decision to lash out and to go outside my marriage and to go find somebody who was 3 years older than my oldest son and 16 years younger than my wife and move out of my house and start this elaborate maze of lies and manipulation and torture and pain combined with screaming and yelling and drug using and drinking. I did things like have a nervous breakdown, literally crawling into my home on my knees in the pouring rain, begging my family to take me back. My teenage children, my wife, promising them that if I ever leave this house, it'll be in a box. And within a week, I was gone again. And so my wife and I did things like tell my wife that I had cheated on her when she was pregnant with our first son. Because I was such a coward. I was so afraid. I was trying to push her away and force her to leave me. It was the most horrible place I've ever been in my life. Through the grace of God, I was allowed back in my home. And we spent 6 years of heavy drug use and drinking and therapy and crying and screaming and yelling to try and fix it ourselves. And in 2018, I broke down and I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never really grasped the idea of fully conceding to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic or an addict. And I'll explain a little more of that as I move forward. I continued to smoke pot and stay away from alcohol for a long time. And it tore me up. And I went back 4 times to sponsors and fellows and friends and came clean and told people I was taking through the work that I couldn't help them anymore and introduced myself as a newcomer again and started over again. And it was killing me. And a friend came up to me. And he said, Jason, there's this fellowship here in San Diego, and it's called the Big Book Awakening, and I want you to look it up. And I'm afraid if you don't approach these people, you're going to die. So I did. I went online. I listened to a man talk. And I'd never heard anything like that in any room of Alcoholics Anonymous, anywhere, ever. I was blown away. And it took me about another 2 weeks to get the courage to write that man's phone number down and call him, basically cold call a stranger and ask him to take me through the work. And I did that. And I went through the work with him up until we were at the 8th step. I had tickets to the Super Bowl. And when I got there, I ordered my wife a vodka cranberry. Someone had pushed a drink my way and I took it. I ordered 2. Bam. I looked at my wife and I said, this is between me and you. And she looked back at me and said, don't involve me in your bullshit. And so I had to come back and come clean again. I go through the work again and I have 1 year and 8 months and I have a workshop. There's like 26 women. I don't know why they all ended up women, but we were doing a workshop in person and I was the leader. I got nominated and I was going to do it. New Year's Eve came. I was to start in January. Bam. Got loaded again. Went and had to tell all those people, I can't help you. People are looking at me like, man, what is wrong with you? You're going to die, right? So I went out from January till June 5th, right? In that time frame, my father, who was a 50-year addict, died. Cracked me open. Something happened. That bitter morass of self-pity, right, that Bill talks about. Quicksand surrounded me everywhere, all directions. I sat on that porch, loaded, after work, crying, looked at my wife and said, if I don't go back, I'm going to go inside and put that gun in my mouth. I came back. I asked another man for help. I started meeting with him. And the first thing he said to me was, Jason, if you don't find the face of your spiritual malady, you're going to do it again. I didn't know what he was talking about. I didn't have any idea what he was talking about. You see, I was in the circle and triangle. I had sponsees. I was doing steps 10 and 11. I was praying. I was meditating. I was going to meetings. I had commitments, and I kept getting loaded. First step problem was a first step problem for me. So we go through the first step. We spend about 8-9 weeks on the first step. When we go through the Big Book Awakening process, same book we all use, same thing I had been through, but I had to set aside everything I thought I knew. I needed a new experience. Get to the second step, and I think at the end of my share tonight, I'm going to come back to the last words in the second step. But I did get to this place to come to believe that God could give me past this time. I'm in my third step, and the difference of a third step for me was understanding that this whole time I had been walking north in life, in recovery, in my life, drunk, loaded, or sober. I'm still walking north. And what happened was a realization that I had to begin to walk south. And what does that mean? That meant for me that I had to learn to be okay with uncertainty. See, everything in my life is certain. I'm in control. I know the outcome. And if I don't like it, I'm going to change it. Including all the past years I had spent in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So this time, I had to walk south. I said to this man, if I go out again, man, I don't know if I'm coming back. And he looked me in the eye and he said, you know what, Jason, there you go again. He said, if God wants you to get loaded again, you're going to get loaded again. You need to accept this journey. You need to be okay with uncertainty and walk this walk one day at a time. And walking south means darkness. It means hills and valleys. It means rose bushes. It means stumbles. It means falls. It means there's times where I cannot see the sky. It's scary. It's scary. And to me, that is the essence of a real third step. And how and why, they tell us how and why it works. How does it work? I have to stop playing God. That's how it works. Why does it work? It works because I have a new director. That's why. Because I become the agent of this principal power. I become the person who is to carry this message and share with you how uncertainty in my life is the one thing that I'm learning to be okay with. I get to be an agent of the power of God in my life and share with you how scared I really am, right? And the last why is because now I have a new father, right? I have a new father. I am the child. One of the greatest things ever told to me was, Jason, maybe you've been looking for the wrong father all along. You need to be searching for your heavenly father. And that was so profound. I'm looking at a picture of my father on the wall here. You know, it's painful and it hurts. I had to tell him to pull the tube. And then he was in hospice for 14 days when it was supposed to be hours, the doctor told me. Then I'm contemplating, did I do the right thing? What's happening here? But see, I have a new father today, right? And so I go from this third step into my fourth step. I'm going into my fourth step now, and I'm going to be fearless and I'm going to be thorough. And I've been through this. I've done this. What does it tell me? It tells me that when the spiritual malady is overcome, that I can straighten out mentally and physically. So let's go back to that malady, right? The face of the malady. Okay. So I got a picture here. I'm going to share it with you guys. This is a little picture of me and my brother, little kids, right? On the curb. I went into this little inner child meditation right before my fifth step. Back to the pain. I don't know where it is. What happened, right? Took me to that photo. Today, my dad didn't show up. Didn't show up. I'm waiting for him. Didn't show up, right? What do I do? I take that moment. Now, granted, this is not why I'm an alcoholic. This is just the pain. This is not why I'm a drug addict. This is the pain. See, I treat that with drugs and alcohol. And I found that I couldn't stop. And I found that when I started, I can't control the amount I take. Qualified, right? But I got to get to the root. If I don't see this, I'm going to die. So that little boy, in that moment, turns his back on everybody and everything. Right? The reason why I walked out of my house at 18 years old, never looked back. Here's the idea. Here's the face of my spiritual malady, and this is what I've come to terms with. A real man never asks for help, ever. Self-defeating belief that is killing me, right? And I don't need your love. I don't need it. It does me no good. It's failed me every time. And what happens? I become a mirror. I project that onto my family, onto my friends, onto everybody around me. I become this isolated statue, just impenetrable. I don't need your love, right? It completely disables me from being able to express love to anybody else in my life. So a real man doesn't ask for help. I don't need your love. My biggest fear is failure because I failed and my parents didn't stay together. My home was broken. My mom's been married 4 times. My dad's a drug addict and alcoholic, right? So what all came from that? Weakness is unacceptable. And guess what? You guys are all weak. That was it. That was it. That's my malady. AA, NA, CA, NEA is weakness, and it is failure. And I will not accept it. Therefore, I could never concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic or a drug addict, ever. So today, I can overcome the spiritual malady only one way. When it rears its ugly head, I lift it up to God. And it does often. It tells me, Jason, you don't need to go and speak on this meeting today. This is ridiculous. You don't need to go lead that workshop. You don't need to help that guy in North Carolina or that guy in Wisconsin. This is ridiculous. That's weak. Go be a real man. Go prove to the world that you're better than everybody and you're entitled to what you have and you're going to keep it and you're going to get more. And everybody's going to envy you. See? So when I see that coming, I lift it up to the Lord and I ask him to please show me that this is not weakness and that my weakness of being a drug addict and an alcoholic can be the strength in my life, that I can carry that message to somebody and look them in the eye and say, I am scared and I'm afraid. And there are so many times when I feel like this is the weakest thing I've ever done. And I want to learn to transfer that into strength to help you and to help me. Properly armed with the facts about ourselves, we can get through one alcoholic or addict to another in a matter of a few hours. That's me being properly armed with the facts about myself. This idea, this principle, it tells us in our inventory to look at principles. Look at principles. What's a principle? Real man never asks for help. Weakness is unacceptable. I'm going to prove to you all how strong I really am. So that's what burned me out. That's what I see today, and that's what I lift up. So coming from that inner child meditation and that realization of like this ultimate manifestation of the malady in my life to see what it really was. Now I can do business. Now I can really be honest and vulnerable and true with other people and with God. Right? So now I'm going into my sixth and my seventh step, and I have to be adamant about not having expectations. See, the constant cropping up of fear and this principle and these ideas in my life is a reminder to me that constant reliance upon God is of absolute necessity. And I used to walk through this process thinking, okay, I'm required to do this. I'm required to do this. I'm required to do this. No, man, somebody that has this idea that he's never going to ask for help from anybody, if you tell him he's required to do anything, he's going to prove you're wrong. So the requirement has shifted to desire. This is no longer required for me. This is a desire that I have, and that has changed everything. I come to a meeting with a desire to hear what you have to say. I sit down to work with the guy with the desire to see more of myself and to share myself and to get vulnerable and to invite the power of God into my life. So we shifted from require to desire, and no expectations on my six and seven, just a willingness to take it to God over and over. And I recognize that in my 10th step when I take a look at that, right? I go to this immense process and I tell myself, man, I've done all of this. I've done it all. Well, wait a minute, man. You've really come to terms with the exact nature of your wrongs, this fear of failure and not being good enough that's driving everything, these principles in your life that tell you you don't need help and we're all weak and that's unacceptable. So how do I carry that into the end of the seven-step prayer says, grant me strength as I walk from here to do your bidding. Go out from here to do your bidding. That's exactly what I need the strength to do. Right from step seven, right into my amends. Okay, well, I'm revisiting amends. I mentioned the things with my wife. I mean, my God, talk about sleeping next to the person that you have harmed every night. What does that look like? What does a real amends look like? Here's what I have found is that letting these people understand what I was carrying around has been more important than listing the harms that I think I have done. So here's an example. My oldest son was 3 years old when my wife and I got together. Okay. I adopted him. It has been a battle. No longer today, by the grace of God, it's wonderful, but it has been a battle. What I came to terms with through the help of another man listening to me and hearing what I wasn't saying and seeing what I wasn't writing. See, that's what the key was. I didn't put it on paper and I didn't say it. He saw it through the grace of God. So important in the fifth step. Jason, you're resentful at that man today because he's not your biological son. What? Start crying. What does that mean? What does an amends look like? That means I go to that man and I look him in the eye and I say, son, I've been carrying around resentment at you because you're not my biological son. And I've been treating you differently than your brother. And I've been harder on you and I've harmed you. Spiritually, emotionally, physically, and for that, I apologize. And it will take a lifetime for me to make that right, but I am willing and I am right here. See, that's different than me going to him and saying, I'm sorry for the time that I put you in the sleeper hold because you were bullying your brother, or the time that I boarded up the window and kicked you out of the house and made you sleep in the bushes, or the time that I said one word to you on your graduation day because I was so pissed off at all the drugs you were doing, right? Or the time I took your girlfriend and forced her to have an abortion, right? See, all of these things, I don't know how I harmed him. He does. Same thing with my brother. go to my brother and I say, bro, I've been carrying resentment at you for stealing the love of our mother. And I've treated you different and I've been superior and I've proved to you your whole life how I'm better than you. And for that, I apologize. See, those are the real amends. It, for me, my experience, they made such a difference because it was honest and it was true and it wasn't me trying to pinpoint harms. It was me letting it out. It was me expressing exactly what I saw through the help of another man when I went through the fifth, fourth, and fifth step. And it was a big part of me being willing for God to remove that stuff. You see, I wasn't trying to dismiss the harm that my father has done me or my mother has done me by being married four times and putting all these men before me or my brother for disrespecting me or always envying me or my son for not giving me the respect that I deserve as a father and stealing from me. What I'm trying to do instead of dismiss that stuff is release it. I'm not dismissing, I'm releasing it. And what was so important for me is when I did the first three columns, it's real. It's real pain. I had to validate that pain. It says fancy to real, but for the majority of that pain was real for me. There's a big part of me that feels how real that was, and I had to see that. Because if I don't see how real that is, I could never release it. I can never release it. It just turns to fancied. It turns to blame. The resent crops back up. So it's real pain that little boy that I showed you the picture of lived with. Got to release it. And here's the thing. I cannot rise above or release it. It's impossible. Can't do it on my own power. Right? It tells me in my ninth step that my real purpose is to be of maximum service to God and the people about me, right? That's my purpose today. And how can I do that if I don't release this pain, if I don't acknowledge this spiritual malady, if I don't concede to my innermost self that I am ill and always will be? That's why I love to introduce myself as a recovered alcoholic and drug addict. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. We are not cured. Okay. That's fine. One day at a time. And with the little dash of history that I've given you, with the torture that I've caused my wife and my family, it tells me, it reminds me that there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. Long period. I do not get to dictate when my wife gets over the hell that I put her through. I do not get to dictate when my oldest son is comfortable enough with me to come and really talk to me about some more pain that I've caused him. But I have to be able to listen to that. And it is so hard. It is so hard. Because then I want to snap back to, I don't need your love anyway. I don't need to hear this stuff because it does me no good. See, that's the essence of me making this paradigm shift, this moral psychology, this desire to invite God into my life, to be different. Because I'm already different when it comes to drugs and alcohol, and I don't like that. And I can't control it. No expectations on the power of God in my life. Here's another thing, uncertainty. I can't control that either. This ease and comfort that I get from the power of God, I don't get to dictate that. It's definitely not the same ease and comfort I get when I snorted a line. That's ridiculous. Take a hit of crack, take a hit of acid, hit the bong. No, I used to chase that same ease and comfort like that, and it doesn't make any sense. The ease and comfort from God is uncertain, but it's guaranteed. It has no expectations, but it's exceptional. And I have to rely upon that. And I have to accept that. And that's the essence of me walking south today. It's different. It's a different life, right? Another thing it tells me in the ninth step, and it's one of my favorite prayers in the entire book, is that I am to ask God to show me the way of patience, kindliness, tolerance, and love every day. When it comes to myself, when it comes to my family. Because see, I acknowledge the existence of God when I walk through the doors. I acknowledge the presence of God when I start talking to you guys and I start realizing like something's happening here. I've always believed that didn't matter. So I go from acknowledging existence to acknowledging the presence. Now I have to practice the presence of God. And I can only practice the presence of God in 6 through 12 outwardly from what's inside me. I cannot transmit something I do not have. Right? That's what it reminds me. So it has to come from inside. It can't be fake. I tried fake and it didn't work. So I moved to my 10th step. And I'm continuing to watch for these things to crop up. I'm talking to people. A lot of us focus on that first paragraph, right? That's all we talk about in the 10th step. Continue, watch, talk to somebody, ask God to remove it, make the amends, go help somebody, love and tolerance of our code. For me, that's only the first part of the 10th step. It's important. I fall short with talking to somebody right away, usually. Thank God for an 11th step and a nightly review. Pretty adamant about that. And that upon awakening, very adamant about that. Changed my life. Slowed down this wheel of fortune that just spins every morning of a business owner, right? Just like, that's how my life is. Just crazy fast, right? And then stop. And then fast and then stop. Got to go to God all the time. But the second part of this 10th step reminds me that I'm to cease fighting anything or anyone. And if I can do that, I'm going to be safe and protected. I'm going to be in a place of neutrality. Check this out. My wife still drinks wine every single day. My wife still gets high every single night. I'm okay with that. My sobriety used to hinge on whether or not she was going to stop. Right? It was impossible for me to do this if I was living amongst that. Come on, man. Isn't it impossible for a woman to endure the torture of a lying, cheating, manipulating man and still be with him? Right? See this whole release, this understanding, this realization. I'm no better. I am truly safe and protected. Third part of the 10th step. But what does that mean? That's contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Not resting on my laurels, continuing to do this, coming to these meetings, talking to you guys, lifting this stuff up to God when my spiritual malady rears its ugly head and tells me, Jason, this is weak. What are you doing? You don't need these people. You're better than this. Right? So learning to pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. In my 11th step, trying to follow these directions. So important. So important. And in the fourth part of the 10th step, it reminds me that every day is a day that I must carry the vision of God's will into all of my activities. Again, I cannot transmit something I do not have. God has changed my life. He has blessed me beyond belief. I am more financially stable than I've ever been. I'm more content and serene than I have ever been. I'm still full of fear at times. I still struggle at times, but I have a solution. And I have an answer. So I take all of this and I go into this attitude of being of service and helping somebody else and carrying this message. And my favorite part of chapter 7 is on page 100 where it says, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When you look back, the things that come to you are going to be better than anything you could have ever imagined. Follow the dictates of a higher power. and your life will be amazing, right? Something I read to the guy when we first sit down. This is a journey with both of us, shoulder to shoulder together. We are equal. And I want to get vulnerable and I want to get real, right? So I'm walking back to the second step, right? I wrote a book. I'm going to put the link in the chat for you guys. It's a really cool tool. It puts passages out of the big book next to scripture from the Bible, and it has a little paragraph. So I'm just going to read you guys one page. These are the last words of the second step, and I think it closes off the whole content of what I talked about today rather well. This is from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 57. It says, when we draw near to him, he disclosed himself to us. And the parallel reference that I put out of the Bible says, come close to God and God will come close to you. Humble yourself before the Lord and he will lift you up in honor. And that is James 4, 8, and 10. And then I wrote, as we get to the end of our second step, we are left with this wonderful statement. Admitting powerlessness and coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves has been a lot. Now we are faced with the question of how do we get closer? The remainder of the steps is the answer. Through inventory, confession, restoration, prayer, and meditation, we can begin to be of service to others and practice this new way of life in all of our affairs. This is what is meant by disclosing ourselves to him. We begin to see who we really are. He will disclose himself to us in this process in the form of direction, inspiration, comfort, love, and peace. This is us coming close to God, humbling ourselves before him through willingness to move forward one day at a time and accepting that we are no longer the one in charge. Through this, he will lift us up in honor. And the consideration says, how has God disclosed himself to you? So it's a cool little tool when you're going through the steps. Thank you so much for inviting me to share. I love you all.